That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
BFFT. Now, built by high caliber millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the bald-faced truth.
That's right. Welcome in. Friday, BFT on the BFT Radio Network, wherever you may be listening. Thanks for making us part of your weekend. We're going to get the weekend started the right way. Got some stuff to give away on the show. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. What's up, Stephen? How you doing?
Doing good, man. It's Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. And yeah, you're right. Let's start it out now.
Come on.
Let's officially say the weekend is now.
But we're there.
We're going to talk sports.
We are going to talk sports. Did you know that for the first time in 20 years, something's going down in Seattle, Washington? Have you heard about this?
I can't wait to hear about it.
It's the first time in 20 years that the Seattle Mariners will have a game at home broadcast on ESPN for Sunday Night Baseball.
Yow!
20 years.
That is
20 years.
Is that? I feel like that's more on ESPN, though.
Yeah, come on now. Because what are we talking? 2004, you know? Had a couple of halfway decent year.
A couple.
For the amount of times the Yanks and Sox get on there just by default.
The Mets,
you couldn't float. Well, ironically, the Mets will be on Sunday Night Baseball because they play the Mariners.
Yeah.
So that's really why. It's a Mets road game. But for the first time in 20 years, Sunday Night Baseball. That'll be fun. I do remember they were at Wrigley Field.
And they threw the wild pitches to lose the game.
Is that what that game
was? It
was
a wild pitch, and then it was the bunts. They kept bunting on them.
The Cubs did?
Yeah, the Cubs kept bunting. Like, I think John Lester.
You bet that game.
John Lester might have, like, pinch hit and bunted.
I believe that. That guy, John Lester, could handle a bat. John Lester, he could handle a bat with the best of them. You know, if you ever needed a bat handled.
He's a bat handler,
and Lester's the guy for the job.
Couldn't throw
he
it to
did
first
that
base.
Night.
Couldn't throw
no.
it to first base, but could
Allergic.
Handle a bat.
Alert! Isn't that? That is one of the odder things in sports. Pitchers that can't throw to first. Just mental block. I don't know what it is. But the Lesty, he could handle a bat. I mean, there's one thing he's known for besides not throwing to first. It's that. So I remember the Sunday night in Wrigley, but I didn't remember the details of the game. So nice. Good job by you on that one. You probably bet that game, too. You probably had Cubby's money line or something.
I probably did.
Come on, Mariners national TV. You gotta fade that. You're not betting that. You're fading that. You're not laying the M's. But have you been dabbling in any baseball lines this year?
I do sometimes, but it's usually not great. It's usually on my Rockies. I usually have a good sense of my Rockies. Over or under. So they have like two. They have two good starting pitchers. I feel like
they're
always like that's really good when you're supposed to have five of them. They have like two solid ones.
For all your Rockies action, where are you on the tweet machine these days?
I'm at Steven_VON if you want all my Rocky takes.
Can you bet the Olympics? I've not checked at all if you can bet Olympics.
You definitely
but you can,
can
get down, right? Yeah.
You definitely can, okay. And I definitely have for sure. I've been super into handball as of late.
That sport looks so intense.
I love men's handball. I think it's great. Women's handball, not as much fun, but I do still like it. Where I did like women's rugby way more than I liked the men's rugby.
Interesting.
Earlier. Yeah, it is very interesting. But the men's handball.
Where do you come out on beach volleyball?
Love it. I am so
women's,
impressed.
You know, the men's.
Both. I am so impressed with how they move on the sand. Like I sink and I slip and I fall on the sand all the time. I don't know how they move on the sand.
I don't get it either. But I will say this. I like indoor volleyball better. I think the indoor volleyball is so intense to watch.
Super intense.
So intense. But the sport I don't get at all is water polo. I mean, in terms of the intensity of the physical nature of it.
Well, I know they're
Can
fighting.
Can you imagine that?
I know they're fighting down below.
They're fighting down below. Some guy got ejected in the U.S. game, and he was getting, like, creamed underneath the water. I mean, don't pull that. But, I mean, he was getting... I mean, what do I say? I mean, he was getting destroyed, and he comes up and hits the guy on the head, and he gets ejected from the game. I couldn't believe it.
Got to keep it under the water, I guess.
I guess, but that was bush
league. Water polo to me is the sport that I want more from. Like I watch it, and I'm like, man, something cool is about to happen, and nothing cool happens.
Well, did you see the shootouts? They shoot it from like, you know, 8 meters away, however long that is. I actually don't know
what
how
is that. What is that in American?
I should know. A meter is basically a yard, right? So if it's 8 meters, it's basically 8 yards. Meter stick, yard stick. So I don't know how far 8 yards is. What's 8 times 3? 24. So it's about 24, 20. No, that can't be right.
We're in America here, Judah. What are we doing?
Yeah. It's like the Nate Bargatze clip of how we come up with our own metrics, and the world uses completely different metrics. Then what they have on NBC like right now is this 10-meter high platform diving. That freaks me out too. So it's the Olympics, and it ends this weekend. Are you sad that the Olympics is coming to an end?
No, because that means we are one step closer to college football and real NFL football.
That's so true.
That makes me happier.
We got preseason games this weekend, which you can also bet on. We got the Seattle Seahawks in action against the LA Chargers on Saturday. We had one game yesterday, actually two games yesterday already. Barn burners, Patriots, Panthers, 17-3 Pats, Giants, Lions, 14-3 Giants. Drew Locke got hurt. That was unfortunate for the Giants. He's got an oblique and an abdomen strain, I guess, already. So tough for Drew, although he got $5 million fully guaranteed with the New York Giants. So good for him. And the Pats and the Panthers. Tonight, you've got a handful of games as well, and games tomorrow. Seahawks Chargers is at 4 o'clock. You can watch it on NFL Plus. Of course, there'll be some local broadcasts as well with that. But we are getting closer to college football season. John's been talking about it throughout the week. John will be back next week with some more shows leading up to college football, just a handful of weeks away from this one. You know, have we talked about Oregon, Ohio State enough? Is that even possible to do? Because that is the biggest game in Autzen Stadium history, and there have been some big games in that building. But is it possible to talk about this game or overhype this game too much before October 12th? In a way, I don't think it is possible, but then again, at some point, you just got to shut up and play the game on the field.
No, you can't talk about it enough. The only way that it doesn't live up to any type of hype is if one of these teams loses before the game. Because both schedules are kind of set up.
They're cupcakes.
They're kind of set up to be undefeated versus undefeated in this one. And if one, you know, if Oregon or Ohio State were to fall and stumble and lose one of these games before that showdown,
yeah,
they would lose a little luster for sure. But I don't think besides that, I think the hype is going to be there. And I don't think we can overhype it ever, because you're right. This is one of the biggest games in Oregon history. It's such an interesting season in college football with all the changes that have happened. And now we're looking at Oregon in a brand new conference trying to solidify themselves as maybe the best team in the conference year one, which is something that I think when Oregon made the announcement that they're going to the Big Ten, I think it's kind of like, you know, they're going to be good. They're going to fit in. But now we're looking at it and we're saying they could legitimately be the best team in the conference.
I think so.
And have the target on their back. And, you know, they got to beat Ohio State at home to do it. And I think that they can. I think they'll be, you know, slightly favored in that one as long as, you know, everyone stays relatively healthy. I don't think we can overhype this one. I think this one's set up pretty well, Judah, that both teams will be undefeated. And then it'll be a big time ball game. You know, two top three teams in the nation probably going up at Autzen Stadium. I mean, how much bigger can you get?
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely massive. It might be one versus two, which is insane to think about.
Crazy, yeah.
It also, you know, what would you handicap the odds of these teams meeting again in Indianapolis if one team goes undefeated, the other team's only losses to Ohio State, it's going to be these two teams at Lucas Oil Stadium at the end of the year again.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
I might give that a 50% chance of happening, because when I look elsewhere across the conference, I don't see another team that's going to lose fewer than two games. That includes Michigan, Penn State, USC.
Michigan would be the one team for me, and I think the only way is if they beat Oregon at home. I do worry about that game in Ann Arbor for the Ducks. It is later on in the season, but I just feel like we're kind of overlooking that and counting that one as a W already, going against the reigning national champions. I know there's a lot of new guys on that team, but they still have NFL talent. They still have top 10 talent. You know, Will Johnson at cornerback, one of the best players in the nation. And I think right now we're just kind of overlooking that and saying, yeah, well, Michigan lost their coach, lost their quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, lost their running back in Blake Corum. Well, they still return Donovan Edwards. They still return a lot of other guys. I think this Michigan team is going to be really good again. And going up to Ann Arbor, I don't think that's a gimme win. I think we're kind of overlooking that just because the big game that Ohio State is at Autzen Stadium.
Yeah, that's going to be a major test for sure. Something about Michigan, though, just doesn't give me a sense that they are like a national title contender. And, you know, maybe it's just like, it's a program that before the last 3 years with Harbaugh, we were making fun of these guys for always leaving meat on the bone. And all of a sudden they win the national title, which was deserved. But now they're going to be a team that we think is still going to be a top team to compete for a national championship year in and year out. It's a little early for me to go there with Michigan. I mean, they won it. So I guess in a way, they're going to compete to defend their title, and rightfully so. But I still don't see Michigan as an annual national title contender in the way that I see Ohio State and Oregon, which is probably a little bit of, you know, local bias with Oregon. But Michigan, it seemed to me a little bit more like one hit wondery than it will be an annual expectation for them. Maybe you just see them a little bit probably more optimistically than I do.
I think I do.
But think about their other playoff appearances before last year. You know, didn't they get just absolutely sledgehammered by Georgia?
They got slaughtered by Georgia, and then they got upset by TCU the very next year.
Right.
And then last year, you know, they rolled through everybody in the playoff.
And who was their semifinal game against? It was Bama, right? So Bama was the statement game, and then Washington was the, you know, overly physical game. And which was a little bit disappointing to see because we've gotten all too used to that narrative of the Big Ten power over, you know, being so more physical than the West Coast power. And that really came to fruition again in the national title game. But I'm not so sure that they'd be able to do that against a team like, for instance, Oregon, who they're in the same conference with.
Just projecting the Big Ten, I think, is just so much different than what we're used to, because we're so used to the Pac-12, and we know these little, you know, little rivalries inside the conference where,
yeah, it's like there's wrinkles, right?
We knew when Oregon goes down to Arizona, like, that's a tough matchup. No matter how bad Arizona is, no matter how good Oregon is, going down to Tucson is tough. We don't know the ins and outs of, well, does Penn State struggle at Maryland? Or, you know, does Penn State or Michigan struggle at wherever, Indiana, yeah, or Illinois, whatever this are, whatever these are.
That's kind of tier two or tier three, yeah, team that has some bite when they play,
right,
at home.
Right, and we're still learning that. And I think right now for the Ducks, like, there shouldn't be any of these losses on the schedule, I think, besides Ohio State and then Michigan for me. Like, those are the, yeah, only two real games I think Oregon can lose in the Big Ten. But we're going to learn at some point, like, maybe it is at Illinois when they come to Autzen. Like, just like Washington State always matched up great with Oregon. Mm-hmm. Every time Oregon played Washington State, no matter if it was at home or on the road, you knew it was going to be a tough game. And Washington State battled and won some games up in Autzen, won some games in Pullman. You know, had the really close one, 2 years ago with Oregon and Washington State up at Pullman. Like, maybe it's one of these teams. We still got to learn this. I think that's why this season is so much more exciting to me, Judah, because I think we're going to learn a lot in year one. And there's going to be some surprises that we're not ready for. Like, I'm saying Oregon's probably going to be undefeated taking on Ohio State. And I think that they are, but maybe they struggle with Michigan State right before. I just don't know how these teams are going to match up. So it's very, very intriguing.
You know, part of our projections and our kind of assumptions with this Oregon team is that they are going to go to a level that they haven't been before in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. The reason we're projecting them to be able to do that is the personnel is at a level that it's never been before. The recruiting is at a level that it's never been before. The NIL investment, the other investment, the coaching investment, it's at a level that it's never been before. Now, it's been built upon successful tenures like Mario Cristobal. Say what you want about Mario, but he took it to a higher level than it's been, or at least than it had been in the previous half decade to 7 years. And then Dan Lanning has taken it to an even higher level than that, Stephen. But there has been a theme, right? The Ducks have been so impressive in so many categories and areas. And this year in the preseason, the areas they're most impressive is their talent and their depth and their physicality. On paper, it's as impressive a program as we've ever seen it. But as the old mantra goes, that's why you don't play the games on paper. Is there a pitfall somewhere in this schedule when we're actually sitting our butts down, watching these games? The Boise State game in week two, the Oregon State game in week three, probably not UCLA, not really worried about that one. Jonathan Smith coming up on October 4th, a Friday night at Autzen Stadium. Is it one of those games where we're going to be watching there and it's in the third quarter and it's a three-point game or the Ducks are losing and we're going to be thinking back on all of our August shows saying, you know what, maybe we gave Oregon a little too much benefit of the doubt when it came to, when it comes to saying that they are just too talented to lose, right?
And you might be right.
I mean, they're college kids at the end of the day.
They are, but you look at Oregon under Dan Lanning, they have blown teams out. Every time they've had a close game, they usually lose these games that are close. You go back and you look, the Oregon State loss was 4. Washington was 3. Washington last year was 3. In the Pac-12 title game at Washington, they lost by 3 points. You know, they have the win at Washington State where they won by 3 points, and then the Texas Tech game, which they won by 8. Besides that, every other game that Oregon has played in has been more than one score. And so Oregon has, to your point, taking care of all the teams that they're supposed to take care of. They had the one game against Utah. That's the other game they had. That was a single-digit game. The Cam Rising, Bo Nix game at Autzen, where it was a one-score game as well. So that was the one win that they have that was under a touchdown. Besides that, Texas Tech, 8 points, the only one that was a one-score game. Besides that, every game's in the 20s, in the 30s. That's how much they're winning by. Maybe it is just Oregon has it on cruise control where they're that talented, and Dan Lanning has it at that level where they can kind of just take care of their opponents until they play the really good ones. We don't know, but so far, that's kind of how it's been for Dan Lanning.
Yeah, it has been. And, you know, injuries is the other thing. What if Dylan Gabriel gets hurt? Which, you know, God forbid. But he's the Heisman Trophy, you know, favorite right now, which is kind of crazy to say. And we've gone through our own evolution here on the show of talking about Dylan Gabriel. At first, it seemed like, you know, John, yourself, myself, we were a little bit suspect of just saying this guy is going to fill the shoes of Bo Nix and match or exceed what Bo was able to bring, because we were all thinking, look, Bo, the leader, Bo had so much autonomy by the time he was in his second year, even though it was his first year with Will Stein after Kenny Dillingham in year one. Like, Bo had the ability to check in and out of plays, make protection calls at the line of scrimmage, call out pressures and blitzes, and, you know, he was such a quality leader. You just expect a new guy, even though Dylan Gabriel's got a ton of experience, the most experience at the position in college football outside of Bo, and now with Bo gone, he has the most experience. Now he's your new signal caller. You just expect him to come right in and do the same thing. I've been suspect of that, Stephen, but after hearing John interview Dylan at Big Ten Media Days, and after kind of just thinking about it myself and thinking about what Dylan did at Oklahoma and Central Florida, you know, if he does stay healthy, I think that he has the right to say that he is got the chance to be the best quarterback in college football this year. And Oregon offensively, they have every right to think that they can perhaps exceed what they were able to do offensively the last couple of years. I'll say it won't be because of the quarterback position. I don't think Dylan Gabriel is going to be taking a step back that's sizable enough to say, oh, that's different than Bo Nix. I think he'll either deliver or exceed what Bo Nix was able to do from a production standpoint, and frankly, even from a leadership standpoint, because that guy's got a lot of swag, and he seems like he brings his skill pieces together in a pretty great way.
But do you need Dylan Gabriel to be better than Bo Nix to get to that next level?
Yeah.
Like that's my question.
Definitely.
Because right now, you know, we saw Bo Nix play at such a high level, and Oregon got to a level that maybe it was a year too early of what we thought of where they should be, but they were right there on the doorstep, and they were maybe the fourth or fifth best team in all of college football last year. For Oregon to get to that, you know, top spot in college football and really compete for a championship, does Dylan Gabriel have to play like a top three quarterback again like Bo Nix did, or does he have to win the Heisman and be the best quarterback in the nation? Or what if he plays, you know, like a top 10 quarterback? Do they fall back a little bit, or are they too talented? I think that's the question for me, is what do they need out of Dylan Gabriel? I don't know. I kind of feel like they do need more than what Bo Nix gave them, and not stat-wise, yeah, not leadership-wise, but being able to push the ball down the field, being able to make a throw when, you know, into coverage and not just dump it off to someone and let Troy Franklin run around. Like, make the throw down the field. I think they need a different element with Dylan Gabriel this
week. Well, and we would both agree they're more skilled at receiver with Evan Stewart coming in. That makes them more dangerous and more dynamic at the receiving position than they were last year. And that even includes Tez Johnson coming back and everything that Tez was able to do. You know, in the backfield, though, it's going to be a challenge for them because with Bucky Irving, you know, going and getting drafted by Tampa Bay, now you've got Jordan James. Obviously, you've got Noah Whittington. You've got the JUCO kid from Missouri that's coming in to compete for some touches as well. Like, you've got depth there, but Bucky was that other kind of undersung guy that replacing his production or getting more out of that position than what you got out of Bucky Irving, probably not possible. This offense is going to have to evolve in a little bit different way, Stephen. It's going to have to be one of those where, and we're not used to seeing this with Oregon offenses, you're going to have multiple receivers or slash pass catchers be among the leaders in the country in catches and yards and touchdowns. Like, I think Evan Stewart has a chance to be the best receiver in college football, as does Tez Johnson. And a Duck fans historically will know it's not exactly a program that churns out top-end talent at pass catcher, but this year has a chance to be the aberration to that. And when you're talking about the offense going to a new level in order to win big in a new conference, yeah, it's the quarterback, but it's also the guys around him also going to a new level. And Oregon's got the talent that's at a higher level than it's ever been.
And I think they have the coaches as well. I think Will Stein is a really good offensive coordinator. And we'll be able to put these guys in the right spots. We saw Tez at the start of last season kind of figure out his way where he fits in this offense. And then the last half of the year just really explode
right
with him and Bo Nix. I think that may happen with Evan Stewart this season, where maybe it takes a couple games to get going. But by the Michigan State game, when it's their fifth game of the season, he goes off and he has a big game. And you're like, okay, this is what we thought we could see out of Evan Stewart in this offense. Because I do trust the coaching staff. I trust Will Stein to do that. And I trust Evan Stewart's ability to get open and Dylan Gabriel's ability to give him the ball. So I think you're right. It is going to be on some of these receivers as well to get open and make the big-time plays down the field in coverage. But we got to see it, man. We got to see Dylan Gabriel make that. We got to see Dan Lanning coach him up at the end of the game in a close game and make sure they win these type of games. It's going to be a fun season for the Ducks. I think they're really good, and I think there's a chance that they could be elite and winning the national championship. Things just have to break their way.
503-417-7575. Mentioned it at the top, but got a lot of things to give away on the show today. Got Green Day tickets to give away later in the show, which is going to be a fun concert. I think they're coming to Providence Park here in a little bit, so you want to stay tuned for that. But let's give away some tickets right now. We've got a pair of tickets to give away to go see Luke Combs at the Gorge, October 5th. That's a big time show. All right, we're not just giving away. I mean, we gave away Beach Boy tickets earlier this week. Giving away Luke Combs tickets now. So caller number 3 at 503-417-7575. Tickets to see Luke Combs at the Gorge. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, having fun with you here on a Friday. We'll do 3 random things coming back on the other side. Taking you till 4:30 this afternoon for Portland Timbers Soccer and Leagues Cup right here on 750 The Game. And, of course, broadcasting across the state on the BFT Radio Network.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
So people love Luke Combs. That's what I just learned. Just gave away some Luke Combs tickets.
Hot item.
Who was our lucky winner?
It was Clint. Clint out in Tualatin, I want to say.
Okay. All right, Tualatin. Appreciate you showing up. A lot of people showed up. You know, there's more Luke Combs to give away, so you don't want to miss out on your chance. Plus Green Day tickets. I mean, that is just loaded. Shout out promo team. Just and you we had tickets as well not too long ago. Zach Brown Band, Kenny Chesney up at Lumen Field. That was a concert I really wanted to go to, but I was not able to go to it. I'm not a big concert guy, but I think, as I've said on the show before, Zach Brown Band, I was when I was an undergrad out in the Midwest, got to see them out in Chicagoland about a decade ago or so, and Those guys rock, quite literally.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Coach Vaughn went up there with a couple of her friends, and yeah, she came back. I mean, she already loves Zach Brown Band, but now she loves Zach Brown Band.
It's like awesome.
She loves Zach Brown, and
people love Chesney too. You know,
her new fave went from Bobby Flay to Zach Brown. So
no way. Did you know Zach Brown? He may have split up, but he had an interesting partner. Some gal that was like not anybody that you would associate with like a country music star. It was really fun. I was looking at that the other day. I don't know why, but I was just curious. But Flay, yeah, Flay's an interesting choice from.
She loves Bobby Flay.
Yeah,
the women love Bobby Flay.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's down just, at Tahoe, the celebrity tournament. So we went there.
That's right.
And we weren't going to go to the golf tournament, but we saw Bobby Flay was in it. And it was right around Coach Vaughn's birthday. So she's like, I was like, I know you want a picture. She's like, I do. And so that was like her birthday present to get a picture with Bobby Flay. And so, you know, we found Bobby on one of the holes. And I mean, it was just.
You're making dreams happen.
It was,
right there,
you know, 30 to 45 year old women that were just crowding him. Tons of them.
Well, how old is this guy these days?
I don't know, but he is a good looker. You know, he's a good looking guy. And I said something like, man, there's so many women. And one of the women's like, well, yeah, he cooks and he's hot. And I said, I love him too. Like, I'm not saying I don't. So
he's 59, bro. But you still got it.
Then I threw out the old comment of, man, I need to learn how to cook in front of all the ladies, and they all laughed. So I felt like I was part of Bobby Flay's team right there.
That's very good. What have you learned to cook since then?
Just, you know, cook people on the court and on the sticks.
Yeah.
College football 25.
That's right. Bobby Flay, thrice divorced. So, available.
He's available.
You better get to work on your cooking skills.
He likes to have fun. You know, he's a party guy.
You know, my favorite thing that ESPN has done over the years is, you know, not Sunday Night Baseball, not the ESPYs, which is kind of a joke. Kenny Mayne did this digital series called Main Street. If you know, you know. This was like 15 years ago. He did this digital series when digital content at ESPN was just budding, and he did this series called Main Street, and one of his episodes was him going to one of Bobby Flay's restaurants in New York, and Bobby Flay was like, you know, treating Kenny Mayne and his crew to a comped meal, and then all the guys, I think it was all the guys from The Sopranos were there, all the actors in The Sopranos, and they were offended that Bobby Flay was treating Kenny Mayne and wasn't treating their table. So they combined tables and got Bobby Flay really upset at Kenny Mayne. That is one of my favorite episodes. If you know Main Street, you know how good it is. It is the single best piece of content ESPN has done in 20 years. It's a crying shame that they pulled the plug on it. And Kenny Mayne, of course, no longer with ESPN. Man, ESPN, they just have a lot different talent there. It's a whole different operation than what it used to be. I think we can all agree on that. Let's do a little three random things. I don't have the benchmark in front of me.
Three random things.
But Stephen Vaughn does. Thank you, Stephen. I will go with this one. This one is pretty random off the top. Jim Harbaugh is coming back to Michigan to be the honorary captain for the first game of their season, August 31st, against Fresno State. Harbaugh, of course, took Michigan, his alma mater, to a national championship game and a victory over Washington. Then he took the L.A. Chargers job. Then he got a four-year show cause. Now he's back in Ann Arbor. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel says, I look forward to having him back in Ann Arbor for that game. And this is just a couple days after Harbaugh got the show cause. So how about that, Stephen? Nothing like sticking it back to the NCAA than showing up as an honorary captain for August 31st. By the way, so he can do that? That's totally fine. Like that doesn't violate the show cause because he's not working in collegiate athletics, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, he's not involved. He's just, you know, I'm just there. That's as a so fan. Good. What are you talking about here?
Oh, 4-year show cause and the next day, honorary captain at the season opener. Pretty random. That's what Jim Harbaugh is. He had a great interview with the Barstool guys earlier this week that was really funny. But Jim is just a nerd, man. He's funny, but he is just an odd guy in a lot of ways. So I was not surprised at all by the show cause. Not surprised at all that he got slapped on the wrist a little bit, even though it literally doesn't matter because it's not like he's coming back to college football anytime soon. But at the same time, it seems petty, and this is kind of a petty shot right back at him. Jim Harbaugh getting to come back for the season opener in Ann Arbor, August 31st against Fresno State. A Fresno State team who, by the way, was going to be led by Jeff Tedford, but Jeff had to resign a few weeks ago for some health stuff again. So I think their offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, one of those guys, is going to be the interim head coach in place of Tedford this year once again. All right, Steven, what's your random thing?
Random thing here. I'm trying to think here. I wasn't prepared.
I'll go again.
I had a busy day today.
You did have a busy day, which, do you want to get into it?
No, I don't.
Okay, all right.
It makes me mad.
Steven has had a day and a half. Actually, he's had a whole week packed into a few hours.
Just banks, phone calls, you know, verification numbers, passwords. All that. Oh. Just imagine the worst of the worst situations, and that's what I've done today.
On a Friday, no less. So, short show for you today. We'll get you out of here and get you into your weekend. But Noah Lyles, he won the 100 meters earlier in the week. He was going for the double, trying to win the 200 meters, and he obviously got a bronze medal, so he didn't win. And then it was revealed that earlier in the day, he tested positive for COVID-19 before he finished third in the 200-meter final on Thursday. In fact, they're saying now that Noah Lyles had a fever around 102 degrees the night that he won the bronze medal. So clearly, the 27-year-old Lyles was not feeling his best, which is a little bit disappointing. He's better in the 200 than he is in the 100, and certainly was hoping to win gold. But hard to win gold when you're battling a 102-degree fever because of COVID and still competing in the event. So, you know, kudos to Lyles for really gutting it out. But that is a tough break, man. You train for 4 years, or in this case, 3 years between games, for one of the top-tier events, and it kind of gets taken from you in a way when you've got a 102-degree fever to deal with.
Yeah, just nothing he can do about it. Unfortunate, but I will say, like, pretty impressive that he still finished third in the event with that sickness. I
That's
mean,
true.
We've all had sicknesses, whether whatever you think about COVID, whatever it is, let's just not talk about COVID, but we've all had sicknesses where we've been down and out and had 102 degree temperature. And for him to have that, and he has asthma as well, like he already has breathing troubles.
That's right.
Like he had to have had a really tough time breathing. Just a lot of pressure on him to win. And he finishes third. Like, I think that actually was a really big time performance out of Noah Lyles. I know he gets a lot of hate in like the basketball world because of his comments that he's made about world champions and stuff, but I like the guy. I think he's awesome.
I'm actually not familiar with his comments.
His comment was the NBA finals are happening and they say they're world champions. And Noah Lyles says, well, you're not the world champion in the NBA finals. You're not playing the world. You're only playing teams in America, where when you're running and you're sprinting and you're doing these races in the Olympics, that is literally the world champion.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to counter-argument that. I mean, the best players in the world play in the league.
But you're not playing against other leagues in the world. Like, you're not playing the best team that's in Spain.
No.
But the best players are playing in the NBA. So it's just semantics.
Because the best players in the world play in the NBA.
Right.
This is my same thing with people that say the World Series is a bad name. Well, the best players in the world play in Major League Baseball. That makes it a World Series.
Right. So what he's saying is that shouldn't be called the World Series. You should just be the MLB champions or the NBA champions and not
world champs.
Not the world champions.
Same with the NFL then?
Same with the NFL.
Yeah.
So it's just semantics. But he got a lot, of hate around the sports world. I'd like it. I mean, he's not wrong.
He's got a lot of confidence and bravado. You know, they were saying, what do you think about this? They're saying you want your Olympic sprinters to be these egomaniacs.
They're like receivers.
They're just confidence oozing out of them all the time. I'm the best. I'm the greatest. Muhammad Ali style confidence. Do you want that in your Olympic athlete? Obviously, it's very consumeristic, but in a way, I totally love the bravado, the confidence and everything. But in another way, after someone wins gold, and it's funny, you see this, I think, almost more on the women's side than the men's side. Like Cole Hawker, for instance, wins gold in the 1500. Most humble guy afterwards. okay, not a sprinter, until the last, 200 meters, right, which was pretty badass. So maybe it's the type of event that makes it different. But, I don't know. There's two very different ways to go about winning a gold medal and talking about it afterward. And I think most people would appreciate probably the humble style more. But at the same time, guys that beat their chest and talk that ish and say, I am the greatest, like, there's something.
Sha'Carri Richardson today, when she passed on the 4x1, she looked behind her.
Spoiler alert.
But no, I agree with you.
Well, she better, because she did, she was supposed to win her 100, right? And she lost.
I will say this, though. I don't mind it when it's the sprints. The sprints, I think, are different. There's two things in sports that I think are awesome when it happens to you. One is sprint. Like, if you win a 100-meter dash, like, I think that is so awesome. And, like, it's just one-on-one, you versus everyone else. Like, I'm better than you.
It's the simplicity of it.
You cannot argue it. The other one is hitting a home run off of a pitcher. It's a one-on-one battle, and you just absolutely dominated him no matter what. Like, you crushed it. You hit the home run. You have no argument. I think those are the two things in sports that I am, like, cool with. Not like showboating, but like being really excited about something, saying, look, I'm better than you. Because you literally are better than them at that moment. And it's just a one versus one type of thing. And that's why I don't mind it when it's sprinting. I don't mind when guys pimp home runs, because it's like, look, you went your best at me and I beat you.
What about dunking? Facial, poster.
Dunk is different because not everyone can dunk. So, like, it's fine. Yeah, it's cool. But, like.
But you don't want them to showboat in that moment?
It's fine.
Scottie Pippen.
That's great.
Patrick Ewing.
Like, if you dunk on someone, it's awesome. You can showboat. I just think those two things are, like, the ultimate.
That's the ultimate.
The ultimate peak in sports is I just beat you and I dominated you.
I would throw in, bowling 300.
But you're going against yourself.
Well, you're going against the pins. You're better.
See, that's what I'm saying.
I would go up to those pins and talk trash, like Pete Weber style. Who do you think you are?
I am. But the sprint and the home run is just the one-on-one battle, just you versus them, and you win. Like, I just...
That's the best to me.
That is the best. So I don't mind my sprinters. Like, the distance running is a little different. Like, yes, it is the one-on-one, but it's not just the quick, snap of the fingers. Like, you're going so fast. I just love it, man. I'm fine with it.
All right. Number three of the random things. What? Do you have one?
I do, yeah. USA versus France is tomorrow for the gold medal. Kevin Durant will be entering the starting lineup, as he had a big game against Serbia yesterday in their comeback win. He had a couple of big buckets. He's going to enter the starting lineup in front of Jrue Holiday, who will move to the bench. So Durant, LeBron, Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, and Devin Booker will be the starting five for the United States as they go up against France and Victor Wembanyama. 16.5-point spread. United States is favored in that one.
16.5?
France plus 820 on the money line on a true road game for United States.
Yeah. Take France. Goodness.
I don't know. France doesn't match up very well with United States.
Yeah, but at the same time,
I would take the points. It's a lot of points, but
it's too many points for the home court. Come on.
I'm excited for this game because I love Victor Wembanyama. I hype him up. Like, he is going to be the best in the league, and he might be at some point, and I think he will be. But this is such a big opportunity for him to go up against these three legends at the end of their peak, like end of their dominance in the sport. Like, he's the up and comer. He's 20 years old. He's going to be the face of the league. He's going against LeBron, Steph Curry, and Durant, who have been the face of the league for 10 plus years, 15 plus years. If Wembanyama has a monster game, which he definitely could, he has the ability to do it. I mean, we're going to be looking at him like as he's already arrived as a 20-year-old on the world stage. I think there's a huge opportunity for Wemby to like get even more publicity, more fanfare, more allure around him. It should be exciting.
Well, it's like those like posts on social media that you see like LeBron's been in the league so long. This is a picture of him when he was playing against this guy back in 2003 or 2004, and it's like Latrell Sprewell or somebody. And you're like, oh my gosh, he's been in the league forever. We're going to get those same posts, 15 years from now, when he's like, remember that gold medal game when a 20-year-old Victor Wembanyama took on a 39-year-old LeBron James and Steph Curry and KD? And you're definitely going to get those, in 15, 20 years from now with Wemby, which is pretty interesting. But you've got to say that Nikola Jokic, I mean, no one plays the international game like Nikola Jokic does. And those guys couldn't miss a three-pointer yesterday.
They were on fire.
Until the fourth quarter. I think they went over
in
the fourth quarter from three-point range. Does France have any sharpshooters to worry about? Because if so, we got to start to learn how to defend the three-point line a little bit better. That was embarrassing.
They have Evan Fournier, you know, former. He's still in the NBA. He can shoot the ball a little bit. But they have Isaiah, like, Cormier, something like Cordier.
Fournier.
And Cordier.
Cordier.
He has been.
And Victor.
He's been awesome in the last two, three games for the French team. He can really shoot the basketball. Batum can shoot the basketball a little bit.
I forgot about Nick. That's a guy that's been in the league a long-ass time.
But that's the thing is the French team doesn't have a lot of shooters where Serbia can shoot the basketball, and that's where I think USA is going to dominate them. Like, the French team wants to beat you up inside and be physical. I don't know that necessarily is going to work against Team USA.
Joel Embiid against France. Huge storyline there, right?
Why? Just because Joel Embiid?
Well, no, he turned down France to play for U.S.
Oh.
And Cameroon, technically. Yeah. But France was
the
big one.
Man of the world.
And he decided to play for us. Everybody made a huge deal about Embiid's game, and he did. But the dude was getting cooked on the glass, Stephen. Like, we were relying on Steph Curry to get all our rebounds.
Well, they're going to need him against France because Wembanyama is really good. They have another big guy, Lazard, who's really good. Yabusele. Very good player.
To Joel's credit, he came down and hit some big shots. And you say KD had a big game, but he didn't score for like three quarters.
I know, but he had some big time shots.
He did hit some big time shots late.
But I actually made that point.
We have too many good players.
I made that point yesterday that KD was getting a little hyped up. Devin Booker had played a better game than Kevin Durant did yesterday.
And we got lucky. Let's be honest. There was a six-point play, right? There was the three-pointer that KD made. Jokic fouled Anthony Davis in the same thing, and then Booker hit a three. Like, that's kind of pretty lucky.
Sometimes you need that, though. That happens.
You got to, but you went from 11 points down to 5 points down in a critical part of the fourth quarter. If it's a straight-up clean play and you miss that three, we lost that game.
I thought the United States was vulnerable in this tournament. I actually thought Canada was going to be that team. They got bumped by France.
Yeah.
I thought Canada would win. I still think this United States team is vulnerable to lose, but I think that was the game. That was the game against Serbia where they shoot the lights out. They're shooting 50, 60% from three and shooting a big volume of threes. That's how you're going to beat them. I don't know that France can do that. And so if they're going to try to play the United States game and not shoot a lot of threes and be physical, I just don't think that they match up that way.
What was the Serbian spread? Do you know?
It was like 15, 16.
Oh, so right just around a tick or two less than the French one?
Yeah, this one opened up, I believe, at 15 and has gone up to 16.5.
Well, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Taking you up till 4:30 today on a abbreviated version of the show. We got the Portland Timbers in Leagues Cup, a knockout stage game in the round of 32. They're in St. Louis tonight, so we'll be picking up pregame coverage of that starting at 4:30 here on 750 The Game. And across the Baldface Truth Radio Network, you will either be taking some best of programming, best of the Baldface Truth, or returning back to national syndication as well. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano today on the Baldface Truth.
Back to the Baldface Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. We'll play a little bunch of audio coming up at 4 o'clock, taking you up till 4:30 and giving you to Portland Timbers Soccer Leagues Cup round of 32 against St. Louis. But first, let's do our big splash. It's the one big thing you need to know today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there.
The Big Splash! Brought to you by Keller Burger, home of the Peanut Butter Pickle Bacon Burger, and voted best burger 5 years in a row. Keller Burger, the burgers your mama warned you about.
Well, Sean Payton is playing some mind games with the media and the public as to who his starting quarterback's going to be for week one at the Seattle Seahawks in the regular season. Buddy announced today that he will have a quarterback in the preseason opener in Indianapolis on Sunday. Jarrett Stidham will start the Broncos' preseason opener on Sunday against the Colts. And then he quickly added Bo Nix, their first-round pick, out of the University of Oregon. 12th overall, he will start their second preseason game August 18th against the Green Bay Packers. So Jarrett Stidham, the preseason opener, Knicks will get the second preseason game at home. I guess Knicks is second on the depth chart, Stephen. Tough break.
We don't believe him, right? I mean, I get it. I get the fact that you got to earn it, right? You're the rookie. You're coming. You
bust? Early to say?
Yeah. Bad pick.
Bad pick?
No, I think Bo Nix starts week one in Seattle. I would be surprised if Stidham does or Zach Wilson does, but...
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention Zach Wilson.
Yeah. No, I think Sean Payton, he has a great reputation, and it's not going to be ruined if they have a bad season or Bo Nix doesn't pan out. But I do think he's kind of, his second act here, right? He was great in New Orleans. Now he's doing the second act in Denver. He's put it all in Bo Nix, and I think that's his move, and that's what he's going with. So I think he's just making sure that Bo is ready to go, not putting all the pressure on him at this right time. Maybe he does feel like he's not quite ready to play, so he's still, feeding him things and making him go slow and stuff like that. But I think he's the guy going week one. He's going to be kind of define how Sean Payton's second act turns out. A
couple of Auburn guys, right? Bo Nix, Jarrett Stidham. In the 1-2 there, and then a BYU Cougar who has a thing for Cougars, apparently, and Zach Wilson. So, fun quarterback room there. Knicks will probably still see some time Sunday in Indianapolis. He just won't start, but then he'll start the second one against the Packers. Hour 2 coming up. We'll give away some more tickets. We'll play some Punch It audio as well here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
B-F-F-T. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Hour 2, abbreviated Bald-Faced Truth, BFT Radio Network, Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Canzano. We'll play a little Punch It audio, going to give away a pair of tickets at the end of this segment as well. Gave away some Luke Combs tickets earlier. Been a lot of fun, Friday show. Taking you up till 4:30 for Portland Timbers soccer. They're in the League's Cup in-season tournament. Did you watch the NBA Cup last year, Stephen? That's what they call it, right? Or no, just the in-season tournament?
I think it was the in-season tournament. Okay. Maybe the Commissioner's Cup?
That's weird.
Maybe something like that. I did watch some of it. The court, they changed the courts. I thought the Blazers looked okay with the red.
That's right.
Some of them looked really weird.
They should do that for the soccer tournament.
Like just change the
just
grass.
Change it up. Yeah.
So what? As a non-soccer guy, what exactly does the League's Cup do for you? Like, does it bring you up prestige-wise, or like? Because I feel like
for me as a fan, or as a or just a club.
You look at the Timbers. They're pretty decent this season. Like, why do you focus on the League's Cup when you can just focus on the MLS Cup?
It's a great question. All the clubs are asking themselves that as well. It's a tournament that puts the teams from the Mexican League, Liga MX, or if you really know what you're saying, Liga MX. I call it Liga MX. There's 18 teams in Mexico, and it's just a better league than Major League Soccer. It's been around way longer, so much history, so much talent, obviously. But Major League Soccer's gotten a little bit better year over year, and the talent has certainly gotten better in MLS. And so they're trying to see how they compare, how they stack up to the Liga MX, right? And so the All-Star game this year was the Liga MX All-Stars against the MLS All-Stars. Liga MX won that one 4-1, but it was, Evander got to go for the Timbers. It was pretty cool. So this League's Cup does come at a funky time in the calendar, right? Portland only has 9 games left in the regular season, and they've been playing really good ball. So in a way, it's unfortunate that they had to pause their Major League Soccer momentum because they're trying to make the playoffs, right? They're borderline right now because the year started quite slowly. And then since the hot mic moment, we've been on a tear. So nothing like a little hot mic to spark the club.
Timbers fans still thanking Steven for learning how to coach.
Just the threat of Steven coaching the team, like, spurring the Timbers to this epic form. So they've been on a roll, but it does pause for a bit. But from the Timbers' standpoint, they've been playing good soccer anyway, so what's playing more good soccer? And they got 2 home games, and they beat Club Leon, another team from Mexico, and that's pretty good. Anytime you can beat a a Mexican club. That's kind of a big deal. Like, Leon, they're down a little bit, but it's still a really good team.
So what you're saying is it is kind of like the in-season tournament where it matters to the teams that are winning, but then once you lose, you're like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like the LA Galaxy got housed by Seattle.
The Blazers won an in-season tournament game, then they lost. They had no chance to advance. So it's like, well, who cares about the in-season tournament when the Pacers go to the finals of the in-season tournament? Everyone in Indiana is like, this is the biggest thing ever. Everybody cares. And the Lakers win, and they're going to hang up a banner.
And it might be a small market thing, too. Like, and the markets in Major League Soccer are all over the place in terms of their size. But I think in a place like Portland, like, we won the MLS's back tournament during COVID in the bubble. Like, that was a big, kind of a big deal here as far as it could be. Like, well, we hung a banner in Providence Park. Yeah, sports is back. We hung a banner for it. And then the one thing
on video games,
which that hasn't gone away.
I may have bet on a simulated game of Madden once.
The one kind of more global part of League's Cup is that if you finish in the top three of this tournament, you either win the tournament, you're the runner up, or you win the third place game, you automatically qualify for CONCACAF Champions Cup, which used to be known as CONCACAF Champions League, which is the biggest tournament in, you know, in North America soccer. So that's a pretty big deal next year as well. But if you don't get top three, then it's more like, hey, you get some extra ticket gates at your home stadium if you're an MLS club like Portland did. But today they're on the road in St. Louis. They should win this game, frankly. St. Louis has had a weird year. And if the Timbers win, then next week they would play either Club America, which is that's like the New York Yankees of Liga MX soccer, or Atlas, another, you know, Liga MX power. So if they win, they get to play another, you know, Mexican powerhouse, which is pretty awesome too. So it's a wrinkle for sure. We're still getting used to it, but the fact that the Timbers are playing good and they're advancing in the tournament, and it's knockout round, right? You can't end it a tie. If it's tied at the end of regulation, you go straight to penalty kicks. So that gives it a little extra spice as well. So that's coming up in about 25 minutes time or so. But first, let's get to some of the best sound from the world of sports. A little Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers still don't have their extension yet. So, trade market's open. You've heard New England. You've heard Cleveland. You heard Pittsburgh. Tom Curran covers the Patriots, and he was explaining why receivers don't really want to go to New England right now.
Bill had a rebuild in 2021. He spent $172 million in guaranteed money that year on free agents. He also drafted a first-round quarterback and a second-round really good defensive lineman in Christian Barmore. 3 years later, the whole thing had gone belly up practically. Judon worked out, Hunter Henry worked out, but Jonnu Smith, Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne to an extent. Those guys didn't work out, and Mac Jones obviously didn't. So Bill had squirreled money away to say, coming after it again in 2025, 2024, and that's where the Kraft said, no, you had your shot, and we're not going to do that again with a 72-year-old coach who just ruined the other quarterback. So they had this massive amount of money, Rich, but they just didn't have anybody to spend it on. There were no left tackles on the market. They tried to spend it on their own core guys, but they still had $40 million in cap space this year and 78 next year. But they were so bad under Bill, and for 2 years have been so bad offensively, that they are repellent. They are wide receiver repellent for the rest of the league. They look at this place and go, my God, they average 10 points a game. Why would I want to go there with a first-year head coach, first-year defensive coordinator, first-year GM, an OC who has not been a full soup-to-nuts OC, and take the risk of having a 45-catch season?
Yeah, it's a good point, and it makes a lot of sense. It's another reason why I kind of scratch my head at Calvin Ridley taking $95 million in Tennessee. It doesn't really fit Tennessee's timeline. Nuke Hopkins, the same thing in Tennessee. Tennessee's a weird team. I've been thinking about them a lot. I guess $95 million, though, hard to turn that down no matter where you are. I've been watching a lot of Jags from 2023, Steven. I know you're a Jags guy. Trevor Lawrence, Calvin Ridley was awesome. It was really, really good last year. kind of shocking the Jags didn't make the playoffs with that connection. But,
well,
Ridley's a good player.
Yeah, Christian Kirk got hurt. That was the big, that was the key. Once Christian Kirk got hurt, Ridley's production went down a little bit. The offense kind of fell off. Kirk's very important to that team, the Jaguars. But I do find it interesting that Ayuk, it sounds like he's going to be taking less money no matter where he goes now. Like, the most money offered was the Patriots, but he frowns so much on the Patriots that he's going to take less money, which I find interesting because when do guys take less money? Like, it, usually it's all about the money. They just want to go to wherever it's going to pay him the most. But Brandon Ayuk is kind of saying, no, like, this isn't the right situation for me. I give him a little respect for that. Like, I'm going to say, like...
Well, we'll see what he actually ends up getting, though.
We'll see. But, you know, based off reports, it sounds like he's not going to get $32 million from anybody else, whether it's the 49ers or the Steelers or the Browns or the Commanders. So he's going to be taking less money. I think that's kind of a choice he's making. I do wonder if this report... Do you think this... When I hear this, it makes me feel like the Niners are back in it.
I also...
Like, it makes me think like he's going back to the 49ers and he's going to get a big contract.
Well, how would you compare the Cleveland and Pittsburgh situations to the New England situation? What if Pittsburgh gives you the 32? Oh, now I'm catching passes from Russell Fields or Justin Wilson. You know? I'm just smashing them together because who the hell knows is going to be playing quarterback for that team. And it's Pittsburgh, for crying out loud. You go to Cleveland, I mean... What, you really think Deshaun's the guy?
But they've had some success in Pittsburgh before. It's not as if, like...
Cleveland has, too. You know, they've got Amari Cooper, and Stefanski knows what he's doing. Frankly, the Patriots' offensive coordinator is a Cleveland guy, Alex Van Pelt.
But
he's never called plays before.
But could it just be about winning, too?
Because The guy just went to, you know, two Super Bowls or two NFC Championship... Three NFC Championship games in a row.
He doesn't want to go to New England where they're not going to compete, where... Pittsburgh made the playoffs, even though they weren't a real contender. Mm-hmm. Like
they've got devil magic on their side.
They do. It was fraudulent, but they made it. The Browns, I think, have a legitimate chance to be the top team in the AFC South.
I mean the North.
I'm thinking Jags.
I cannot predict the AFC for the life of me.
The AFC North is insane.
Insane.
And the Browns have an argument to be one of the best teams. I mean, think how good they were last year with Joe Flacco. If Deshaun Watson can be average, that can be a really good team. They got
the Chubster coming back.
Chubb's coming back. That defense is fierce. Myles Garrett, Defensive Player of the Year.
I mean, that best defense in the league last year, like it wasn't.
You add Brandon Ayuk to that mix, that could be a really dangerous team.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I'm a Bengals guy. I'm a Burrow guy. Like that, I think Baltimore's going to take a small step back. And because they lost, you know, Mike McDonald, who's leading the Seahawks to the Super Bowl. So you're going to have to take a small step back regardless. And I think Joe, I mean, that was a freak injury that Joe got last year in Baltimore, ironically, on a Thursday night. It kind of pains me to say, but injuries will decide the AFC. Whatever quarterback gets hurt and whatever team loses their QB. And frankly, you thought it was going to be Cleveland until Joey Flacco led him to a playoff game, which is crazy. All right, Coach Prime. It's been a little bit since I heard from Dion. Getting heated with another Colorado reporter.
Coach Sean Keeler, the Denver Post. Happy summer, my man.
You don't like us, man. Why do you do this to yourself?
Come on.
You don't like us.
Mark likes me, by the way. Huh? Yeah. Mark said he likes me.
No,
so
but
that's
you,
one.
You don't. Why do you that's do what, this, though?
No, I'm sorry. Two-parter, if I could.
No, I'm serious. Why do you do this? Like, you know you don't. Like, why do you do
this? No, it's not about that. Football question.
Why do you do this? Like, it would be hard for me to really engage in someone I don't like or something I don't like. I'm just asking why. Like, why?
Gotta pay
what
the bills,
did I do?
You didn't do anything. It's not about that. But this
but
is a football
why?
Question.
I'm asking you why.
Yeah, you can ask. But that's
okay,
not
answer me. Because you want me to answer you. So
yeah, okay, that's fine. That's fair.
Why?
Why? Because I have questions.
Give me your why.
What's your why? What do you want to know?
Why do you always on attack? Like, what did we do?
Where am I on attack today? Where am I on attack?
Yeah, I'm not going to give you opportunities to be on attack. But I'm asking you why. Like, what does it do for you? Like, what happened?
It's not about me.
But what happened to get you like this?
It's a good question.
No, I'm serious. Because I want to help. I'm serious. I want to help. Because it's not normal.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
Can I ask you a football question?
No.
Seriously.
No, we'll talk about that. When we talk about that, I'll talk about that with you.
Can we ask you a football question, please?
When I talk about that, we talk about that. We can talk about that.
I don't know the backstory.
This happened twice today, too. There's another cut in there of Dion with another reporter getting into it. Coach Prime is on the defensive as of late.
Oh, here's that other clip then.
Next guy. Eric Christensen with CBS Sports Colorado. Tyler.
I'm not doing nothing with CBS. Next question.
Joe Rigo, my last
question. Ain't got nothing to do with you. It's above that. Ain't got nothing to do with you. I got love for you. I appreciate you. Respect you. Ain't got nothing to do with you. They know what they did.
I'm here in Denver, not national.
You are who you are. CBS is CBS.
All right.
Joe Rigo, my last question.
I respect you. That's why I told you that. I'm looking you in the eye as a man. I respect you. I got love for you. But what they did was foul.
Oh, Dion is such a joke. What a joke.
Colorado's good. I love. Here's
so,
the thing.
I've been petty.
I have been pro Colorado.
What a
pro
joke.
Dion, I think more than anybody on the show. A lot of people around this probably area. I thought it was going to work.
God, it doesn't even work for CBS National. Works for the local CBS TV station. He's like, another with CBS.
This season's going down in flames. I do think they win week one and there's going to be hype around it. And then they go to Nebraska and get absolutely rolled.
This guy is a joke. Unreal. What else do we got? I mean, who do they have week one?
North Dakota State.
Okay. You think they win that one?
Well, the spread's less than 10.
That's a game.
North Dakota State's a good game. A good team.
That's a game. How far we've come from the three games that opened last season, and we couldn't get enough Colorado in our lives.
I mean, we had people saying they're going to the college football playoff. I mean, it was.
Where's Mike, by the way? Has Mike in Portland called in like literally forever? How are you, Mike?
He has. He's called. He calls sometimes.
I screen him. I haven't heard from Mike in long time.
We need some Colorado takes. Hopefully, they
Mike,
win.
Where are you? Where's the Colorado love? Where's the Colorado going to the playoff?
I need Colorado to win the first game of this season. Just for the Mike call.
You just need it. Yeah, that's true.
Like a dominant performance that win by 28 over North Dakota State.
Oregon State linebacker Melvin Jordan talking about what they're building in Corvallis. Punch it.
I would say everybody just trying to come together and really trust each other. Obviously, we have the athletes to do it. We all know what we're supposed to be doing. But it's really just having the trust in my outside linebacker just to make sure that he's going to set the edge and knowing that I'm going to be there so that he doesn't have to make that play. I feel like just the trust, we're still trying to build that right now.
That's the one thing that I really can't wait to see at Oregon State this year is the defense. The offense, I think, will be a work in progress. The defense has a chance just to, you know, just create chaos and make it difficult on opposing offenses. When Trent Bray took over, he was linebacker's coach, and then they got rid of Tibisar and promoted Trent. You saw an immediate change in posture and attitude and energy and bite and, frankly, schematics with this team on defense. Now that Bray is the head coach with that backlog of coordinator experience, I need to see more of that. I need to see a Beaver defense that gives people hell on offense. And I think they have a chance to do that, even with some of the departures.
Yeah, I think they do. And Kinzano brought this point up yesterday was, how does the defense react to it being a Keith Hayward defense now? Like, it's not a Trent Bray defense. Trent Bray's the head coach. He can't just keep his eyes on the defense and that's it. He's got to focus everywhere.
I'd push back on that. I mean, I think Trent is saying the right things, but this is not... He'll probably say, hey, this is Keith's defense, but
he doesn't have
the reason Trent is the head coach is because he's led a very successful defense.
But you're not going to
divorce yourself of that skill set just because you bring him into the HC role.
But 100% of his focus is not going to be on the defense.
Right.
That's what I mean by that.
Yeah. I mean, but it will be a together, relationship more than anything.
I would still call it,
if you're saying, hey, it's a Keith Hayward, I'd call it a Trent Bray defense. Okay. But, I mean, you might be splitting hairs, but right. I think Keith and Trent, maybe, what is it? It's a Trent Hayward defense.
It's Trent Hayward.
Keith Bray.
You're right. I just think there might be a little bit of difference, and I think that's...
And we'll see, frankly.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, maybe it's an unknown.
And I do think that for Oregon State to be successful, like you said, that defense has to be nasty. They have to be, especially the start of the season when the unknown at quarterback, we don't know who's going to start. We don't know how good that offense is going to be. For Oregon State to be successful, they got to be nasty on defense, especially the first half of the season. So it's nice to hear the players out there saying, look, we're building trust with one another. We got the athletes. I've heard that numerous times from those players. They say, we got the athletes on defense to compete and win. So now you got to put it together. And I think that they will. I'm with you. I like the coaching staff. I just think it's a little bit different. We got to see it on the field, because I think that offense is going to take a couple games to get ready.
Week 3, Oregon Ducks come to Reser Stadium for a September 14th.
I mean, I'm excited for that one, but I'm more excited for Week 4, honestly, against Purdue. It's a win. It's a winnable game. They got to win that game.
Well, if they've got the dudes on defense, like we're saying, I mean, that Purdue game, maybe it's a blowout. Maybe we're making too big a deal about it.
That's what I'm saying. I can't wait for that
Purdue
one.
Purdue picked to finish last in the Big Ten. That's
boiler up.
Boiler up. Last piece of audio. Lindsay Theory covers the Chargers for ESPN. She talks about the concern around Justin Herbert's injury and what it means for the regular season. Punch it.
Before Justin Herbert obviously injured his foot, I mean, what do you kind of know about those injuries? Like, those things can linger. I mean, but if there is anybody as tough as Justin Herbert, I mean, the guy played last year with his thumb, like, kind of in, kind of out and around. So it'll be interesting to see the part that I'm concerned about, whether his foot heals or not, is that this is a new offense. This is an entirely new receiving core for him. Quentin Johnston's going to his second year. There's improvement that needed to happen there. Josh Palmer's a guy that's been around, but really has never risen to the level of play that they need from him consistently. So Justin Herbert's missing really valuable time. So while they're optimistic week one is very much within reach, it's like how much of just building chemistry are you missing out not being out there for several weeks? And if so, like, how much time is that going to take in the season for you guys to be able to kick it into gear together?
Any concern around Herbie in this plantar fascia?
I think there is.
Going into week one?
I don't have concern about the passing game. I just have concern about Herbert's health in general. Like,
well, they're not going to throw the ball.
That's the thing.
Like, Greg Roman,
so
right?
So that's why I kind of disagree with Lindsay there, is that I don't think that he has to get that chemistry with Quentin Johnston on the outside. Like, he has to get the chemistry with handing the ball off to Gus Edwards or to J.K. Dobbins, who they have in the backfield. Like, I think that's what they're going to have to get used to. Yeah, he's going to have to make some throws, obviously. But they got Ladd McConkey, who's going to be out there making plays. I don't worry too much about Herbert and the chemistry. I just worry about Herbert staying healthy all season, because they need him to be healthy.
Yes.
So I don't worry about week one chemistry. I just worry more about just the long-term health of Herbert.
Tell you what, the Chargers, they've got some defensive questions to ask. Offensively, they might be pretty good. You know, Palmer, a guy nobody talks about, but Josh Palmer will be the number one target for them. Quentin Johnston, terrible rookie year, but he's still a good athlete. They've got the Raiders, Panthers, and Steelers in their first three games. Three winnable games.
They got time to get that chemistry down.
And then the Chiefs on week 4, September 29th, early bye week for the Chargers, week 5. So that will all come into play too. But fascinating team. In terms of fascination index, the Chargers are up there for me. All right, I did promise this, so let's pay it off. We got Green Day coming to Providence Park, which is going to be pretty epic. We'll take caller number 4 right now at 503-417-7575 to see Green Day at Providence Park. And it's on theme because we got Timber Soccer coming up here in about 10 minutes time or so. You want to see Green Day at Providence Park? I believe this concert's in September. We'll take caller 4 right now at 503-417-7575. Back for a final segment. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, been a fun show. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. We'll do this again a little bit next week, and then John will be back next week as well, officially for the lead up to college football season and the NFL as well. We have a trade in the NFL with a former Beaver. Nashon Wright traded to the Minnesota Vikings today from the Dallas Cowboys, third round pick out of Oregon State in 2021, and now with the Minnesota Vikings, who are kind of rebuilding their depth at the cornerback spot because of some tragedy, of course, with former Duck Kyrie Jackson, who lost his life in a car crash last month. The Vikings also have had injuries at that position with Mekhi Blackmon and Shaquille Griffin, and so they made a trade today for Nashon Wright from the Cowboys, and then the Cowboys get Andrew Booth Jr., who was the 42nd pick of the Vikings in 2022. Steven, do you know who the defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys is?
I probably should, but no, not off the top of my head.
It's one of those things where it's like, now that preseason's here, you're going to pop up and watch more games and figure some more things out. It's Mike Zimmer.
That's right.
Mike Zimmer. Calling defense in Big D.
Well, they got rid of, you know, Dan Quinn left, so.
Dan Quinn said peace.
Said peace out. Mike Took Zimmer a, said, give me
let me in on that.
Guys, yeah.
You talk about
He's a good coach.
He's a hard ass.
But a good coach, though.
A hell of a coach.
I'd say this.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Head coach probably not, yeah. But I'll take him as a coordinator. He's one of those guys that looks Tell like a what. Coordinator.
One of my favorite Seahawk playoff games, which there have been many.
Well, the Blair Walsh.
I mean, too good, right? And people forget that game. I mean, that was cold as heck. But Seattle was down, I think it was 9-0.
Do you feel good going about into those the fourth quarter? Wins, though? Like when,
oh, yeah.
When guys just choke away games?
Yes. It means my team winning.
you didn't do anything.
Well, you know what? You talk about choking games. I was watching the Two Bills documentary the other day. The Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells doc that ESPN did, that was so good. It's like, we remember Scott Norwood, right? Wide right. I mean, the Bills could have won at least one of those Super Bowls. They weren't going to beat Dallas, but they could have beat the Giants in that first one. And how history might have changed if Norwood makes that kick. Because everybody talks about Norwood missing that kick. That was Bill Belichick in his, you know, he really came on the scene. With that Super Bowl, with Lawrence Taylor and that Giants defense.
What do you think, he's a fraud?
I mean...
Belichick fraud?
Belichick doesn't win a damn thing if Norwood makes that kick. That's all I'm saying. But it's fascinating to see kind of the pivot points of the NFL and its history with little moments like that. But Mike Zimmer calling defense in Dallas. The Seahawks preseason opener is coming up tomorrow, 4 o'clock, against Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, Mike McDonald, right? I mean, two Michigan guys. McDonald worked for Jim.
There you go.
As Wolverine's defensive coordinator before going to Baltimore. So
how excited are you for the Seahawks this year?
Pretty jacked. Actually, in the last 24 hours, I've gotten really excited.
Well, I've heard a lot of things about how they're a sleeper team. Watch out for the Seahawks.
Yeah. If it all comes together, they are talented enough to be very good. But a lot of first-year coaches, right? So that's the one concern. But you know what? Why not?
Still got Geno Smith as your quarterback, too. That's...
Well, you know, top five QB. You mean that as a good thing, not a bad thing. Like, good thing. It's been great. We'll talk to you guys again Monday. Coming up next on 7:50 The Game, Portland Timbers soccer against St. Louis City SC in the League's Cup. Appreciate you being with us. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. We'll talk to you again next week, 3 to 6 p.m., right here on the Bald-Faced Truth.